Sure, you know, the Pegasus helped us. That was a confirmation of the assumed distribution of meteors. We had the theoretical distribution line, you know, small, the occurrence of meteors in Earth orbit, yeah? And that helped us to reconfirm the approximation of the approximately distribution curve.
So it really didn't change the
It didn't
design of
change the
anything.
design. It reconfirmed the distribution. There was no new, no new innovation or no new finding.
But it was still felt necessary to test
Necessary
Pegasus to do
because
that.
it was entirely open, you know. We didn't know anything about the meteor distribution in Earth orbit.
And someone suggested to me once that some of the data from Pegasus was useful in the meteoroid shield that was intended for Skylab. Do you remember
No,
anything about
actually,
that?
if you know exactly what you expect, you know, then you can design for it.
Yeah.
It certainly had an influence on the Skylab meteor shield.
The one thing that intrigued me too about Pegasus, although it never happened, is somebody suggested that when Gemini was going, the Gemini try and get into Earth orbit not too far from the last Pegasus satellite that was still up there and retrieve some of those
Panels.
panels. That
Actually,
really
it
would have
would
been
have
an
been
interesting thing.
a helpful thing.
But it never came off. It was
Never
just an
came
idea.
off.
What about the logistics? Did that prove to be a larger problem than anybody ever anticipated in,
Of the Saturn? Oh no,
involving the
oh no.
Saturn?
You know, we knew it's big, you know.
Yeah.
And you had to do something big, you know. The water transportation and without a hitch over. There was no problem, except that the dam broke once, you know, or a lock broke once, and you almost couldn't get the Saturn
Oh,
on.
yes, that's right, yeah.
That was the only hitch, you know.
Do you think that some of the test facilities at MTF were all that necessary, or why? MTF seems so gargantuan. Is that?
The total space program took a different turn, you know. We were talking about 12 Saturn V a year. I don't know for how long, you know. We had to tool up for 12. And the maximum we produced were, or we fired were four in a year, you know. I mean, the whole thinking, was really, it took a tremendous change. And whatever we planned for the large future of space flight, didn't come to bear. So it looks as if it would be too big now. Never told us that it shouldn't be built so big because the requirements were here.
At the
The
time of
requirements
CEO.
changed.
When the Marshall Space Flight Center first got rolling, the Launch Operations Directorate was part of it. And then split off. Was there a real problem with doing that, or what was the rationale behind that decision?
What the actual rationale was, it probably came out of Washington, you know. Whenever manpower assignment and so on, money assignment and so on, the launch operation always was a jump to the center, you know. It seemed we never got enough, you know. So by changing the status of that operation, you know, they had at least a defender in Washington for their own requirements.
Right. Okay. Do you think,
technically, of course, managerial and technically, we had to create the interface. It wasn't too hard. We made a very reasonable cut. It was not fine.
Do you think that there were occasions when the management in Washington should have allowed Marshall maybe more leeway in doing things? Was there ever feeling that, you know, that headquarters was meddling too much in center affairs? Or?
Oh, that's hard to say. Of course, you know, Marshall, we never was able to enjoy that freedom of action, not they ever had before.
Yeah.
In planning the future.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you wanted to fly an experiment on one of the earlier papers, which was not related to the actual Apollo program, we got clobbered left and right from Washington, money for that.
Yeah.
And Houston, they were able to hide everything, somewhere, And they made things which were never related to Apollo,
Huh.
It still worked.
Yeah.
To do that. And it were really held to put the nose to the grindstone.
Marshall, for a long time, seemed to have somehow more visibility, I think, because the booster program really came online first, and all the test flights that were, especially in the early Saturn I series. And it seemed to be so expensive, maybe, and there was just more oversight of Marshall, perhaps, at that time. Does that seem a reasonable explanation for some of this?
You mean the overhead?
I mean, just, watchdogging Marshall a little more than Houston, perhaps, because Marshall was more visible during the early test launches and so on.
Been,
People kept seeing all these rockets go up, and they would write to congressmen, what's our money going for, and so.
It's possible that the visibility caused more strain than gold.
Would you say the visibility in terms of management was one of the big reasons for the success of Saturn?
It was not the visibility of the management. That was good engineering.
Yeah.
With the best management and you have bad engineering, you don't succeed.
How do you assure good engineering?
You just have to have good experienced people.
Yeah.
And I had a very good staff experienced people. Those were my division chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Dr. Nofestus was my
Did these people come out of the Army with you, or did when
yeah,
you get into the Air Force?
Yeah, they came out from the Army. This was us.
Uh-huh.
And we have a good communication across the center, It's really our lab out of the Army time, the other. Lab chiefs.
Yes. Yeah, this photograph is familiar to me. I think Aikens has it in one of his chronologies. I think he used it in that's a good picture. What about Oswald Lange? He left early in the program, comparatively early.
Yeah, because he was just pissed up.
did all the interference from Washington get him? Or
the interference of Washington. Yeah, that was. He had the he was a program manager,
mm-hmm.
And suddenly it was not good enough. Bepp requested a whole new outfit operations division,
industrial operations.
Industrial operations,
yeah.
And it had to be headed by highest man, they could find, which was what was it?
First cat was young,
It was young first, and then
O'Connor. Why did they bring in young? What was the reason for getting young in there?
An experienced man from the industry.
But he didn't last very long.
Gone to 2 years, then he went home again.
Yeah.
He couldn't stand it long.
He didn't.
He lost so much money.
So the experienced man outside didn't really fare that well once he got on the job. What made O'Connor succeed better than Young, do you think?
You mean longer? To stay longer?
I should just
stay
longer.
Yeah, because it means everybody, And the Air Force wanted to have a little piece of the pie, too.
Yeah, they had it going for them for both ways, because they also had Phillips on the line there in Washington, too, who was getting
late.
Yeah.
Phillips came in much later than O'Connor.
Did Phillips do a good job, you think, from his slot in Washington?
Phillips was the, you know, the strict military man according to order, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You do that and that, you know. Go down, you do that and that.
Well, it's got me with these.
Well, strict military order.
Yeah, well, the so-called gem boxes that came out of Miller's office. He had a series of boxes in his administrative charts for project and program management. Right, there were five of them. That was this mirror image thing.
Yeah.
And, boy, that really cut around a lot of people and went right down into the Saturn program office.
Sure. It always hurt the people, you know, because simply...
He's bypassing a lot of
people. Bypassing them and give the manager a... Mostly the manager wouldn't move anyway on his own, you know, but it took the incentive away from the actual doing men. The doing men did the work and the manager got the pat on the back, you know.
Do you think, how was Von Braun as a manager? Did he have to, how did he pick up the skills that he must have had in managing Marshall Space Flight Center.
Naturally, you know. He was not a lone manager. You know, it was a whole... He had this, you know, the board was managing, you know.
Were those the lab chiefs? Is that
sure.
Mostly the board? Yeah, the board, okay. And as I understand it, too, he was much more willing than other people to take criticism, too, and respond to criticism.
Yeah.
Which, is that a true characterization, you think? Well, this has all been very helpful. Do you have any additional comments you want to put in here at this time?
No, actually, I don't have anything else to say. I could, of course, on the other hand, I don't know, stories to tell.
What are your favorite stories? What stories would you like to tell?
That's hard to say.
There's so many stories involved.
Yeah. You know, one of the stories is, which is, of course, at that, you know. If you ever heard about that,
The Jupiter Nose Cone.
Yeah. And, do you know?
No.
Do you know that one? That was the first oriented vehicle really recovered from space in the year. That photo is February 58. It was recovered 57. So all the manned, you know, at that time, I wrote an article for a magazine. You know, at that time, I stated, you know, we have found a way to get the men back out of space with the type of ablation heat protection.
And this was the same kind of stuff?
That's the same kind of stuff.
Huh.
Basically,
yeah.
Which was afterwards used on the Apollo, Mercury, and Gemini,
yeah.
Apollo. That was actually developed in this one here. Our people.
Okay, and the Jupiter nose cone recovery things, these came in nose end forward or by the blunt end?
No, nose end forward.
Nose end forward.
Which is, of
yeah.
course, a much more severe heating.
Yeah.
Than the total blunt approach.
Mm-hmm. Now these must have been AVMA photographs.
It's AVMA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, now again, how did the nose cone material decisions evolve? Again, was that a kind of a committee type thing?
In our?
Yeah.
In our area?
Yeah.
No, that was a development out of my laboratory.
Uh-huh.
We screened material, thousands of material, you know,
yeah.
before we hit that glass fiber reinforced phenolic.
Yeah. What kind of test apparatus did you have to do that, or how did you test that out?
No, we had, of course, we had small jet engines which run tests.
And
we had to
turn the engine on and stick the nose cone up in the
Find out. We had small burners, bigger burners for small samples, and then for nose cones up to this base, you know, this size. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you could stick even nose cones larger than the whole Jupiter, not the re-entry, the Jupiter C nose cone. Mm-hmm. This one was also tested in it on the big test and on the big engine, mm-hmm. just like an under.
And that would give it a pretty good test, I would guess.
Oh, yeah,
for sure.
And it was successful.
Did you have any work that you did on the F1 combustion instability problem? Were you involved in that?
No, that was in the laboratory. You know. I personally, you know, more or less, was initiating or just keeping the thumb on it. You know.
Yeah.
We were responsible for the engines. You know.
How did they fix on that ever come about? Do you recall any details?
The instability, that was a subdivision of the injector and fields, you know. It was finally decided that the instability is a horizontal under the injector plate.
Yeah.
A coupling, hydraulic and gas coupling. You know.
Hmm.
The shock with the oscillation then horizontal across the plate and fed back into the liquid system.
Ah, I see.
In the injector plate.
So all you had to do was put something down there to break up that horizontal...
break up the horizontal oscillation.
Uh-huh.
Put a ring in the center, some,
yeah.
some fence out. They had to be cooled, of course, you know, because it's pretty hot there.
Yeah.
So the fins were then drilled and partially the fuel was ducted through.
And how were they drilled? Was that an electrical discharge machining process?
That was basically. Rocketdyne uses that type of machining.
Was that?
Successfully, for the new engine.
Do you know when that electrical discharge machining came in? Was that with the Saturn program, or had they used
that
before?
That was on the Saturn program, not before.
It was only on the Saturn. That's one of the things I've been trying to chase down. I've never been able to pinpoint.
Yeah.
Is it?
I don't know exactly the date it was introduced, but it was introduced with the Saturn program.
Was it developed particularly for the Saturn program, or was it something that had been working on?
It's a technological approach. You know, the machining was so expensive. In many cases, it was not even possible to machine it.
Yeah.
As you could do with this electrical discharge. Machine all the shapes, whatever you want,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty hard sometimes, just playing with this machine.
And another thing that has always intrigued me about Rocketdyne was the development of furnace brazing technique for the big engines.
Yeah, furnace brazing is basically an old technology, you know. I mean, that was used, I don't know, many decades back. But finally, to assemble all the little pipes, keep it in form, stick it in the oven, and have it braised at one time. You know, of course, it's a matter of technological.
That was the tricky part of it. Yeah.
It was a tricky part of it, and really raise their profit, more or less, because it's less handwork.
Yeah.
The first were hand braised.
I was going to ask you that. It meant before you down each joint, each one.
Sure. And it was not quite so precise as the machine braised.
Yeah.
The furnace braised.
That's what gets me about some of the looking back at the Saturn history. You always have this impression futuristic machine tools and fantastic processes putting this thing together. And yet there's this image, you know, of the man standing in front of a bundle of tubes, artisan almost, doing the hand brazing work on his own. But that's about the only thing that I can think of offhand where that would be that kind of artisan type fabrication. Is that correct, at least early in the program?
Oh, that early in the program.
Yeah.
But later on, they made other quite successful innovations, hard processes. The machining of propel us.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
With all the curves, I thought they were just maybe cast. I never thought about that.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, the surfaces have still to be machined.
Yeah.
And having it built out of two parts, you know, where you really can get to other surfaces too, you know, and then braze it or weld it or fusion bond it, you know, the two parts. It's an innovation and it's really a successful improvement of the whole process.
Did Rocketdyne develop this thing, or was this something that Marshall got into?
No, Rocketdyne did some work on this one. We did many things, but not this particular one.
That's an interesting point. I'll have to remember that and try and chase that down a little bit. Okay, I think it's about time I took my leave. Taking a good part of your afternoon here.